I'm Marco Werman with The World. It seems like a lifetime ago when we last spoke with Daily Show host Trevor Noah, but actually it was just last Wednesday. We had been speaking about the election and Trump's victory. Today we have the second half of my conversation with Noah about his struggles with identity growing up biracial in South Africa.
One thing you learn very quickly as a biracial person is that one half is just completely ignored. You will never, you know, experience any of its privileges or just advantages.
Noah has a new memoir out. He talks about the complexities of growing up in apartheid-era South Africa with a black mother and a white father. And in the book, he writes, racism exists and you have to pick a side. You can say that you don't pick sides, but eventually life will force you to pick a side. I asked Trevor Noah what he meant by that.
When I say choose, it doesn't mean be in opposition to. I understand how quickly these conversations can devolve into something that seems like a battle cry, but it's not that. It's just you do have to choose. I mean, as much as we are humans, a lot of women in this election, you had to go, no, I'm a woman, and this is what I'm choosing, and this is the side that I'm coming down on. And life forces you to make those decisions. So in the face of misogyny or in the face of racism, you are reminded of the side that you are on, whether you choose it willingly or not.
You found, though, as a kid in South Africa that black families often kind of afforded you certain privileges, right?
Yeah. But that was because I lived in a country where the government had made this the law. You know, according to the law, I was a person who was superior to half of my family because they were black and I was half white. So I grew up in a world where, according to the law, I was in a different position, and there were some people in my family and some people in my community who treated me accordingly. Now, luckily, I was a child, and so in my mind, I just assumed they were treating me like that because I was like a really cute kid. You know, as a kid, you don't ever think to yourself that anything positive you're experiencing is because of a political bias that's been put in place. You just see it as you being a child having a good time. And apartheid ended by the time I was a functioning human being. So I'm really lucky in that those ideas were never set into stone in my mind. I never got to experience them fully.
That identity struggle pretty much starts for you on day one, hence the title of your book, Born a Crime. Describe the scene in the delivery room when you were born. And I know this is not from memory. Can't be. Who told you the story?
Yeah,
your mother, I guess.
It's a really fun story. You know, my mom tells the story of how in the delivery room, you know, I came out, and the doctors cleaned me up. And then there was just an awkward pause where all of these doctors are standing around. And there is this black woman. And she has just given birth to a child that does not look black at all. And everyone's looking around basically for the culprit in the room. You know, just that awkward, awkward moment where everyone realizes what has happened. Because this was illegal in the country. You know, they called it a crime of miscegenation at the time. Anyone who was engaging in interracial relations. And so my mom says they just looked around very awkwardly and then handed me over to the nurse and then just had to play it off like nothing happened. And then later when questioned, my mom said, oh no, his father is from Swaziland, which is a different country, and people in that country are light-skinned and that's why he looks like that. Don't worry, he'll get darker over time, you know. But, you know, it's a wild story you have to tell, but it's a wild state that we were living in the time.
So we'll get to your father in a second, but your mother at the time worried that you might be taken away by the South African government. What would have happened to you?
Well, I think my gran worried more than my mom. My mom was always someone who didn't allow herself to be consumed by worry, but my gran was always worried that I would be taken away. You know, I could be taken away to an orphanage. If I was ever found to exist by the police, they would have had, you know, every right to take me away and send me off to an orphanage to be given away to a family who looked like me or at least shared some of my features so that I would not be diluting or polluting any of the blood, you know, in my community. And because that would just break down the laws of apartheid.
So your father, who was not in the delivery room, you describe him as very Swiss, particular, precise. He opened one of the first integrated restaurants in Johannesburg. In those years, apartheid years, you could only be with him indoors, right?
Yeah.
Explain that.
Being with my father in public was pretty much exposing the crime that you have committed as a family.
Mm.
You know, that's the equivalent of doing a line of coke on the sidewalk. You have to conceal your crime because that is exactly what it is. So my father and my mother knew that being seen with me was something that could lead the police to suspect. And then, you know, the next step would be to imprison my mom and then find my dad and take me away. So I only existed with him in closed spaces. You know, sometimes if we were out in public, I wouldn't walk with him.
Yeah, there's that just heartbreaking scene in a park where he's kind of walking ahead of you and you try and catch up with him. And yeah, he runs away from you. It's just...
Yeah, well, you see, it's heartbreaking in hindsight. I mean, at the time, I was just a kid running with my dad. You know, I was running and my dad was running and my mom was chasing me. And I thought, what a wonderful family I have. We're all running together. Now, they were running because of a very different reason, but I was having a fantastic life and I choose to keep it as that in my memory.
So you lost touch with your father for many years, and when you found him with the help of the Swiss Embassy, you discovered that he'd been following your career. He had a scrapbook of your comedy appearances. What was that day like for you?
I can't lie. That was a surreal and beautiful moment for me. You know, as people, we can try to deny it, but being chosen is probably one of the most wonderful feelings you can experience as a human being. I think a lot of the time, that's all we're doing. Going through our lives, we are trying to be chosen. We try to be chosen in a relationship. We try to be chosen in a job, try to be chosen in a community. And that being chosen gives you a sense of belonging. It makes you feel like you belong and it makes you feel like you matter. And that's where parents play a big role, because when we are chosen by our parents, that becomes the foundation of how we see ourselves in the world. So for me, I always knew I was chosen by my mom. I knew my dad loved me, but because I'd lost contact with him for so long, for various reasons, I didn't exactly know, you know, if he still chose me. And then to get to a point where you meet a man after 10 years and you realize that not only was he still, you know, seeing himself as my father, but more importantly, was following everything I did in my life. That's a wonderful feeling, you know, a feeling that I think and I wish everyone would have, and that is to know that you mean something to someone who is, in essence, one half of what you are.
Trevor Noah is host of The Daily Show and author of the just-released Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Really great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.